Why the date, Daniel? Why is the date important? You know, it could be 2020 for all I know.
Yeah, well, I mean, I've never said that I think anything spectacular or cataclysmic will happen on that date exactly, although it may. I mean, there's also been, you know, kind of, you know, indicators that it might. But the date is the end of the long count of the Mayan calendar, the Great Cycle, which began 5,123 years ago. And December 21st, 2012, it's the winter equinox, and it's an astronomical event seen from the Earth, which is the winter solstice sun rising at the dark rift at the center of the Milky Way. This is the work that John Major Jenkins did in his book, Maya Cosmogenesis. Now, why an optical alignment of that sort would, you know, could have tangible effects is something that we don't really have a scientific explanation for. In one level, it's just a positioning, in that it's like the Earth and the Sun aligning with what the Maya talked about as the cosmic mother or the black hole at the center of the Milky Way, and maybe in a sense the shift from, you know, I mean, we went to a shift from having just an Earth. We thought the Earth was the center of the world, of the universe. Then we thought the Sun was kind of the center, and now we're recognizing there's this huge galaxy with the center of the Milky Way being the center. So maybe that shift, just as the shift, you know, the Galilean shift from Earth-centered to sun-centered, had tremendous effects on human consciousness. Maybe this shift to a galactic-centered cosmology and worldview is also going to have tremendous consequences.
And you see this change happening? Do you see growth here?
Sure, I see tremendous growth happening right now. I mean, I see, you know, the opposite taking place too. Of course, you know, we can see a lot of bad indicators, and you know, fresh water is getting scarce, and you know, we've had this horrible Gulf oil spill, and the use of these toxic dispersants, and so on. But yeah, I mean, I'm seeing more and more openness in people, and kind of a greater and greater capacity for people to integrate new ideas and information and kind of hold on to them and follow the thread. I think actually people are getting smarter quite rapidly.
You call your book Notes from the Edge Times. What does that mean?
Well, I mean, the book is kind of notes. I mean, most of it are short pieces that I've written since 2012 came out, and they're presented chronologically. So they kind of tell the story of the evolution of my own thinking since the last book, and also my reaction to world events like the global financial crisis and so on. And they are kind of notes, almost like musical notes. And I mean, I do feel that we are in a kind of edge time, as I'm sure you've talked about a lot on the show.
Sure.
You know, if we look at, you know, the species extinction crisis, you know, the bats and the butterflies disappearing, the glaciers melting. I mean, we may be in a very difficult situation very soon. You know, people like James Lovelock, the scientist, talks about the possibility that only like 150 million people will be alive at the end of this century, if you look at just current materialist trends. So we're at the edge of one world, you know, as the Hopi talk about. And then there's this potential or this capacity through, you know, some quantum leap, through some participatory act of conscious evolution, that we can move into a different cycle of being.
It is remarkable, frighteningly so, how this is evolving so quickly, Daniel. I mean, it's like a freight train going downhill. It just, things are changing rapidly. And do we factor in the others, the greed factor, those people who want to change and manipulate for their own well-being? Does that affect any of this?
Yeah, but I mean, I mean, of course, that's a part of the puzzle, you know, maybe that's probably how consciousness evolves. There's a dynamism, you know, to the instability, and you know, in a way, there's like, you know, who's actually clever, and what principles does the world actually, at the deepest level, operate on? What principles does nature use? Is it competitive and aggressive? Is it cooperative and collaborative? I mean, we have to use our cunning to kind of solve the puzzle. And that's also very much what the Mayan creation myths talk about. If you look at the hero twin myth from the Popol Vuh, it's all about the heroes using their creativity and their cunning to outwit the lords of darkness and the lords of death and come back up to the surface. So in a way, you know, maybe we're reliving that myth in real time.
What would you advise a parent to? to tell their 15-year-old about the future?
That's interesting. You know, I go through different levels of feeling like definitive that I have great advice for people, and I'm at a level where I feel less definitive at the moment. I mean, it's very complicated. I have a 9-year-old daughter also, you know, so I obviously think about this in relationship to her.
Sure.
I mean, you know, it probably would be good to learn some basic life skills. You know, whether it's you know, farming or you know, how to heal with local herbs rather than having to rely on doctors and you know, medicines that come from distant lands. I mean, I've gotten very interested in a line of thinking, you know, from people like Dmitry Orlov, who wrote a book called Reinventing Collapse, that we may very well see a kind of collapse here, similar to what happened to the Soviet Union, to Russia after the Soviet Union melted down. You know, if we look at the economic scenario, I mean, that's not impossible at all. You know, we're kind of running on fumes at the moment. So in a way, for people to begin to take back some of those basic life skills could be just intelligent preparation.
And you say in the notes from the Edge Times that what's happening to us now financially, this debacle, this potential collapse, total collapse, might be good for some. Tell me about that.
Well, I think it actually could be good for all, to be honest. I mean, you know, one thing is that we kind of we forget that money is a human-made, construct, and that it's a kind of abstraction, especially now that we've cut it off from, you know, the gold standard. I mean, even that, like, what can you really do with gold? I mean, you can't eat it. You know, it's this virtual abstraction that's like floating in this sea of data. It's a debt-based currency. I mean, one thing we look at in the film 2012 Time for Change and in my book is the idea that you could take a design science approach to the monetary system. And we talk about in the film we interview Bernard Lyotard, author of this book called The Future of Money. He was one of the architects of the euro. And he makes a whole case that it's the structural design of the money system is completely unsound and unsustainable. And anybody who's put in charge of the controls, the car is still gonna crash against the wall. So he proposes that we have to shift from a monoculture where we have one form of currency, and it's a form of currency that acts in a certain way. It enforces competitive and aggressive behavior by nature. I mean, a bank issues a loan, but they don't give you the interest. You have to compete against everybody else in society to get that interest back.
Right.
So the whole thing is based on competition and artificial scarcity. So he proposes that we create a set of tools for exchanging value that have different values inscribed in them. One could be what he calls a trading currency that has a demurrage charge, which is a negative interest. So it's indexed to a basket of real world goods, foodstuffs, perishables, oil, other resources, and so it declines in value over time naturally. So people, when they amass that currency, they're better off sharing it than hoarding it, and that creates community bonds rather than the money we have now, which acts sort of against humans' natural instinct to form community.